Thank you, Pamela Jones. It's a mouthful sometimes, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I had to cough. I had to turn off the mic for a second there.
I'm sorry. I didn't know what to do. I saw you in the camera. No, do I jump into it? Just let her go. She knows what she's doing. She's a professional newscaster. She will get through this. And you did with flying colors.
Yes, you cut that microphone. It's too bad I couldn't cut that camera.
Well, Pamela, it's very nice to meet you. I'm Matt Bubala filling in for Brian Noonan today. Let me ask you, because some people are texting. What is the story? We are getting more snow. We're not getting more snow.
We are expected to get more snow.
That's what
they're
saying.
It's not going to be like what we saw a couple of nights ago, but we are going to get more. Any more right now is aggravating, don't you think?
It's just an annoying amount of snow
really
now. Winter, we get it. It's white out. It's, you know, we had to shovel. We had to break our backs. We had to snow blow. It's slushy.
I don't care if it's an inch. I don't want half an inch more at this point.
There's no more frosting needed on that cupcake.
Right.
We're done.
I think winter should just give up. We're done. It's over. You lost. We won. You know.
I don't think winter is real good at giving up sometimes.
No,
that's the problem. It's only early February.
Right. I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's beautiful. On my Facebook page, you've got beautiful Indiana dunes, you know, with the snow, new fallen snow on the trees. And then you have to think about all the dirty slush and the salt on your car and your coat's dirty. And so it's pretty to look at as long as you don't have to go out in it.
Yeah. It's good for about the first 2 hours. And then the cars start getting through it and all the mud and everything gets mixed into it. And then it gets a little annoying.
Right.
Okay. So a little bit more is expected. It must not be everywhere, though, right? Is it just kind of a scattered?
It will be scattered. But I think probably the bigger news story is that temperatures are really going to drop. And we're going to feel those below zero wind chills inland, not near the lake. The lake, of course, has that warming effect during the winter. So
we're going to freeze. But then you said in a couple days, it's actually going to warm up a little bit, right?
Tuesday 30s, it's going to feel like summer.
It's going to feel like summer and the slushiest day of your life.
That's true. I forgot about that
That's
part.
Gonna be a mess.
Let's just end on the positive. Beautiful weather on Tuesday.
Okay, good enough. We'll get back to Pamela at 3:30 with the news headlines then, and she'll keep you up to dated. Yeah, that's a new word. Up to date on any new snow totals or whatever you might be facing. I'm sorry if you've been out shoveling and snow blowing all weekend, everybody. I hope it hasn't been too bad for you, but you got through it. We got some snow on the ground. Hopefully your kids got out and did a little sledding and had a little fun as well. Everybody had a snow day on Friday, and so with any luck, everybody's back in school tomorrow and life gets on as normal. We're going to have some fun today filling in for Brian Noonan. Our buddy Seamus Toomey is coming in a little bit to talk about, you've probably heard about it by now, because I think they've been on every show on WGN Radio twice by now. The former editor of DNA Info Chicago is now going to run a new local journalism enterprise called Chicago Block Club. We'll find out all about that. Our friend Phil Rogers, the former Chicago Tribune writer who writes for MLB.com now, will jump on the phone and chat with us about Yu Darvish and the Cubs and whether the hot stove is finally going to heat up now that Yu Darvish has signed a deal. Will all these 100 others start falling into place? Will the contracts start flying now, as we're only a couple days away from pitchers and catchers reporting? Andrew Wittenberg is a reporter for KSL out in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's become a friend of our overnight show, and he is out in Seoul. Oh, I'm sorry, I keep saying it's Seoul. He's in Pyeongchang at the Winter Olympics. He will check in with us on what the latest is there. And our good friend Dr. Natalie Marks, a Chicago veterinarian, will jump in to tell us about keeping our four-legged friends safe in the snow and other things we need to worry about in the wintertime with our pets. So lots to do over the next 4 hours here on WGN Radio, as well as, of course, keeping you up to date on the traffic and the weather and the snow as it continues, allegedly, to come down. Later in the show, we're also going to give you a chance to talk a little bit. You're welcome to talk throughout the show. 312-981-7200 is the call-in line. It's also the text line, 312-981-7200. If you have something to say, jump on in. I want to talk a little later in the show about This Is Us. Because, of course, for the Super Bowl last week, they had the big episode afterwards where you finally found out, because I'm not ruining anything, we've known for pretty much the entirety of the show that the dad on the show dies. We've known that. We just didn't know when or how he was finally going to happen. Well, they finally killed him off last Sunday, and it was a very emotional moment for a lot of people. Personally, it was built up for such a long time, it wasn't that big of a deal to me. But I know we'll tell a story about how some people reacted to that, and I wonder, are there moments in art, in theater or movies or television where you really got that involved? You got so sucked in, despite it being fiction, that you were moved to tears, that you were shaken by a character death. I imagine there have been times over the years, or that you're just so stunned. Game of Thrones comes to mind as a show that famously killed off what everybody thought the main character of the show was being built around about 9 episodes in. And if you hadn't read the books, you didn't see that coming, and you were stunned. I think there have been a few moments like that. We'll let you share some of those at 312-981-7200. We've also got a report on the least and most stressful jobs and why you may want to look into some of the least stressful jobs. I also talk about the ability of those jobs to grow in the future. So there might be some jobs out there you want to think about. If you've got kids or grandkids that are looking at their career, why not have a job that's not that stressful? That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, right? 312-981-7200. Matt Bubali in for Brian Noonan here on 720 WGN. Bubali in for Brian Noonan here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower building on the Magnificent Mile, and it is a snowy Magnificent Mile. I'm looking over right now just south of us at the Apple Store. You know, they built that new gorgeous Apple Store right on the river. I don't know if you've been down there yet, but a couple of weeks ago, you probably saw some stories, maybe a month or so ago, when we had our first snow. There was a story about how the roof on the Apple Store was not really built with snow in mind or to handle it. And I don't know if it was icicle issues or if it was just the heaviness of the snow. But as I'm looking over, you know, the top of this Apple Store looks like a laptop. It looks like the top of your laptop that you would flip open. And the part I can see, you could see where there's tons of snow on the roof and big parts of it look like they've broken off. And I don't know if they came and then would have come sliding down. So probably it's cold. All the snow gets built up on there. And then eventually the sun warms things up a little bit. It probably cracks and then just slides off. And I don't know if people got buried at some point in avalanches of snow off that roof or what happened. But it's going to be interesting to see what the stories are about that and how people dealt with that. I'm sure you have dealt with quite a bit of snow pretty much everywhere in our listening area. I know not, you know, down by Bloomington, Illinois and places like that, you guys didn't get walloped. But up here in all the suburbs in the immediate Chicago area, got a really good amount of snow. And you can see down here on Michigan Avenue, the planters look like they have a good, it looks like about a foot or so built up. I don't know what the exact total is we got here in Chicago, but we got a pretty good amount. And I do an overnight show here on the weekends, 2 to 5 a.m. on Saturday mornings. And when I was in here the other night, the entire time I was here, you know, we have this Pioneer Court Plaza out here between us and the Equitable Building and this Apple Store right here on Michigan Avenue. There was a bobcat for the entire 3 hours. They dropped off a dumpster on Michigan Avenue, because it's the middle of the night, dropped off a dumpster on Michigan Avenue, and a bobcat was scooping up the snow on this court for 3 hours. And dumping it in there to get it out of the way. Sometimes you just get so much snow, especially here downtown, there's nowhere to put it. And I can only imagine there are a bunch of you out there with alleys and side streets that are just a mess right now and are hard to get through. I know where we live out in West Dundee this morning, heading to church, it was a mess on some of the streets. It was not good at all. It was not good at all. 312-981-7200 is the number. Jerry's on 720 WGN. Jerry, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Nothing. You were talking about art and movies and like a movie that made you like emotional or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say Steel Magnolias is the one that I can watch, but I have to have a box of Kleenex. And probably a bottle of wine to calm myself.
It's that good. Steel Magnolias. I remember seeing Steel Magnolias. And I haven't watched it in a long time, but it comes on cable from time to time. So that's Julia Roberts, Dolly Parton,
Sally Field,
who is Olympia Dukakis?
Yes, yes.
And also, who is Warren Beatty's aunt?
Oh, my God.
Right?
I can't remember her name. Yes. What is her name? She plays Weezer.
Yeah, she's kind of crazy, right? In real life.
Yeah, she's grumpy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, her. And Julia Roberts, I believe, has cancer in it, right?
Something with her kidneys, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I cry too much to really know exactly what's wrong with her.
I don't even know what happened in the movie. I'm just crying the entire time, so I'm not sure, but it's really sad.
It's an awesome movie, but yeah, you need Kleenex and wine to get through it.
Man, Steel Magnolias. Now, that's got to be close to 30 years old now, right?
Do I have to answer that question?
Well, listen, we're all getting there.
Yes,
don't worry about it, Jerry. That's okay. Jerry, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You too.
Bye. All right. Thanks. 312-981-7200. Okay. Steel Magnolias. I think that's a good one. You know, if we're going to go Steel Magnolias, I imagine you got to throw Beaches in there. I imagine Prince of Tides comes in there for some people, where you just were so moved by a character and what was happening to them that it really caught you off guard, as happened to some people with Jack from This Is Us in the past week. 312-981-7200. There's a story out that if we ever get to Mars, the beer might taste good. Why in the world would that be? Flowers used to add a pleasant bitterness to beer would grow well in Martian soil. That's why. So there's so many craft breweries now here in the States. That's such a big thing and a big deal. And we have such a privatization now of space exploration. You've got to think those two worlds are going to collide. And somebody's going to try to start brewing beer on Mars. That's what we'll do first. And then probably a casino, maybe some slots, you know, and they'll legalize recreational marijuana as soon as we get to Mars. 312-981-7200. Shirley MacLaine, thank you. A bunch of texters just jumped in. 312. Shirley MacLaine is who I was thinking of, who was also in Steel Magnolias. Laura has called in from Streamwood. Laura, you're on 720 WGN. How are you today? Hey, Laura.
Hi.
Hey, Laura, how are you?
Oh. Good. I think my tearjerker moment was when Han Solo died at the hands of his son.
Really?
Star Wars.
Now,
I was really bummed.
Laura, I'm one of the biggest Star Wars geeks you'll ever meet. I love the Star Wars movies. I did not get moved to tears when Han Solo met his fate, but that really shook you.
Yes.
Did you see it coming about 2 seconds before, or did you think Ben was really going to hand over the lightsaber?
I thought he was going to handle it because, you know, Han Solo can't die.
Man, that one got you. Okay. All right. Well, that's a pretty good one. What did you think about the most? Since the most recent movie is a little more recent, we won't give away what happens. But were you very upset at the end of that?
I honestly have not seen the.
What? Hold on, Laura. You were so moved that you cried when Han Solo died, and you didn't even see the most recent movie.
I know. Probably
So basically you said, okay, Han Solo's done, screw it, I'm done with this whole series, I don't need any more, I'm finished. Is that what happened?
No, I just didn't have time to see it.
It's been out for like half a year now. Well, not half a year, but it's been a good 2 months.
I know.
Oh, Laura, what am I going to do with you? All right, well, thank you for calling.
Yes.
Bring a box of Kleenex to the next one when you get a chance, just so you know, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for jumping on the phone, Laura. We appreciate it. How do you cry at Han Solo and then not bother with the next one? Bambi? Okay. Bambi. Producer Jess says Bambi is the one that got her. I imagine that happened for a lot of people. Were you 4 at the time? Or was this recent?
No, recently.
Okay. All right. Well, Bambi's a time-honored tradition. Tim's on 720 WGN. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. What's going on?
It was the worst because, you know, we tried to, I don't know, because we were in the middle of that sexual revolution thing and stuff. And, you know, you try to be a man, but you got to be, heartwarming. But the worst was I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I started crying when I seen My Girl.
My Girl, My Girl, My Girl. I'm trying to remember. I know it's Anna Klumsky's movie. I think I've seen My Girl. I don't remember what happens in My Girl.
What's his name died at the end? Macaulay Culkin.
Okay. And it brought you to tears?
Yeah, 11 or 12 years old. And I was trying to be very manly about it. I couldn't do it. So, and even now, I sit there and I get a tearjerker. But Steel Magnolias, I've been hearing all these movies. Yeah, they're tearjerkers.
All right. Hey, there's nothing wrong with crying at the movies, Tim. You're a well-rounded man.
All right. Thank you for that.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Have a great weekend. 312. I'm serious. You could. Hey, listen. This is my litmus test for anybody in life that I know. Anybody. I will judge anybody to the death on this one thing. If you don't cry when you watch It's a Wonderful Life, you have no soul. Zero. I'm dead serious on that. I will take that. You know, if I'm ever president and I'm, you know, nominating Supreme Court justices, one question. You cry when you watch It's a Wonderful Life. Haven't seen it or nope. You're not on my bench. You have no soul. I'm sorry. That's the truth. 312-981-7200. Old Yeller, somebody said. 630 text, I cried my heart out when Dr. Green on ER died. I was sobbing so hard, I think I was upset for a week. All right. Fair enough. Somebody else text The Notebook. The Notebook is another one. 312-981-7200. News coming up in a couple minutes on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Brian Noonan here till 7 o'clock on 720 WGN. We're taking calls because Jack on This Is Us finally bid it last week, officially, although we've known for like 2 years now that that was going to happen. They dragged it out forever and finally gave us the emotional moment after the Super Bowl. It's very emotional already for Patriots fans. I can't imagine them watching This Is Us after what happened to their team. A lot of people texting with dog movies. Marley and Me, Old Yeller. Let me add to that. There's a movie called A Dog's Purpose that came out about a year ago. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm going to ruin it for you, sort of. So the whole movie is about what happens when a dog dies. It gets reincarnated into another dog. It's a new puppy, and here it goes, and it finds a new family. So they literally kill off the main character like 7 times in that movie. I think I cried for an hour and a half. I think I actually made noises that embarrassed my kids. I was crying so loud in that movie. I will not watch it on rental. I will never watch it again. If it comes on cable, I'll flip it as fast as I can. It was a wonderful, beautiful movie. I will never watch that damn thing again. 312-981-7200. Brian, you're on 720 WGN. Hey, how are you?
Doing good.
What's your movie?
I can't believe nobody mentioned Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams. Now, when do you cry? Is it, hey, Dad,
Kevin Costner, when
want to have a catch?
Catch with his dad.
Yeah.
Oh, I every time I lose it, I lose it.
Yeah.
And the weirdest thing is, another thing is showing my age. I'm 62 years old.
Okay.
The very first movie I ever remember crying at, you're not going to remember this because you're probably way too young. The movie Heidi with Shirley Temple.
Now, I've never seen the movie Heidi, Brian. I only know of the movie Heidi for one reason. Why is it, what is that reason?
Well, in the movie, like, for some reason, I forget the whole storyline here, but she ends up getting, you know, her parents die. She goes to live with her grandfather in the mountains in the Alps or something. And then some family member takes her away and takes, you know, custody of her. And she fell in love with her grandfather. And her grandfather's going through the city trying to find Heidi, and he's going like, he's with a horse cart going like, Heidi, Heidi, and she's going, grandfather, grandfather, because you can hear him outside, and they can't find each other. And I was about like probably 6, 7, 8 years old, and I was
finding
my ass.
Well, Brian, do you remember, the only reason I know of the name of the movie Heidi is because isn't that the movie that one of the networks famously cut away from the broadcast of an NFL game? That was like going into overtime or was coming down in the final 2 minutes because the time was up and they had a regularly scheduled program. It was the movie Heidi. Didn't they cut away? And that like changed everything in sports. They never cut away from live sports anymore because of the outrage.
I don't remember that whatsoever. No.
I'm pretty sure that was Heidi. All right, Brian. Thank you so much for checking in. Heidi is another one. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200. A lot of texts coming in. We're going to jump away from this for now. All of you that are calling, you can call back in a little bit. We've got Seamus Toomey and Stephanie Lule to come in and tell us what is Block Club Chicago. We'll find out right after the news. Right now, let's head upstairs. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. Let's get your news headlines with Pamela Jones. It's Matt Bubala here on 720 WGN, filling in for Brian Noonan until 7 o'clock. Thanks for being with us, everybody. We will get back to your heart-rending moments of TV and film later in the show. Joining us in studio right now is Seamus Toomey and Stephanie Lule, two of the founders, right? Is that right? Of Block Club Chicago. Hey, guys. Thanks for coming in studio.
Thanks for having us.
Now, to anybody who listens regularly to WGN, they'll have heard your voices already because you've been on with Steve Grzanich, you've been on with Mike Steven, you've been on with John Hansen. So I'm fourth line. That's okay. Daylight hours. I like that.
You're in our top five.
So. I appreciate that stuff.
Those were just the warm-ups. This is the one we've
That's right. That's
for.
Right. You got
this
it all.
This is the one that matters. Yep.
I appreciate that very much. Okay. So let's talk about DNA Info. I think everybody knows about it. If they didn't know about it before, in the last 2 months, they learned about DNA Info because it was this awesome local, macro journalism. I don't know how we describe it as, but you guys covered every single neighborhood in the city. I worked with you guys doing the little radio bits here that people would hear on WGN radio. And John Hansen worked with you guys for a long time. And you guys covered the neighborhoods like nobody covers the neighborhoods. You went to meetings. You went to alderman meetings. You went to groundbreakings. You guys did everything. And quite honestly, it hurt Chicago for two reasons. One is everybody lost out on a lot of information, and the rest of the media lost out on where they picked up all their stories from.
Exactly. And we heard from a ton of those people in the days after we closed about basically, where do I go with this story?
Yeah.
One of the beauties of having reporters out in so many different neighborhoods is that we were very accessible. If you had a story, if you saw something weird on the street or you didn't know what something was, you could email one of our reporters, text one of our reporters. We had a lot of questions like, what is going on the corner of, you know, Kedzie and whatever. Yeah. And we would go out and check it out and write a story about it. So it was, you know, we were accessible, and so they had no outlet anymore, or no obvious outlet anymore to go with their stories like that.
Yeah, and I think the local media tried to pick it up a little bit and have done more local stories after the outcry over you guys closing down, but there's no way to handle it in the same way that you guys did. So now you're back with what you're calling Block Club Chicago. So what is this going to be?
Yeah, Block Club Chicago will be covering a lot of the same stories that our reporters at DNA Info did, but there are a couple of, you know, pretty big changes. One, we're a nonprofit and we're doing it ourselves this time. We have to pay for this, so it's going to be quite a bit smaller to start.
Sure.
But we have big plans to grow over time and be covering most of the city again.
So you guys started a Kickstarter campaign. I believe the initial goal was $50,000, right?
$25,000.
Yeah. And you're at now
$135,000, which is just absolutely mind-blowing, amazing, and we cannot thank Chicago enough for the support.
And it's interesting because people say, well, nobody supports journalism, nobody wants this stuff, nobody this or that. But then when you ask, people say, well, yeah. And if we think about what we pony up all the time, quite honestly, I was just going through my credit card today and canceling things that are recurring charges on my credit card. If we think about the things that we pay for all the time, to pay just like $5 a month for local journalism, and that's what you guys are planning to do, right? It's going to be a subscription-based service, basically?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it will be metered, so you'll have access to so many stories per month for free. But we are offering a membership right now for $50 a year online or $5 a month. You can go to blockclubchicago.org and sign up for your be one of the first to sign up for a subscription.
So the money that was donated through Kickstarter, that was just donations through Kickstarter to help you guys get started. Those aren't subscriptions, right?
We had a level in there that if you gave more than $50, that we would give you a subscription as well. So there's quite a few of those, you know, a couple thousand people that would are already on our subscription list. So it's been great. And like you said, you know, I pay for a ton of stuff each month, you know, and some of it's great, you know, like Prime or Netflix, you know, stuff like that you really get value out of. But we think sort of the time has come that people have come around to this idea of these recurring costs, that if they find value for it, that they will keep it going. And that's our hope with Block Club Chicago. We hope people like DNA Info enough to say, hey, that was worth it.
Yeah.
I'm willing to pay $4.99 a month to keep finding out what's, you know, what the heck's going up on the corner over there, or what's the new coffee shop, or, you know, why did that place close, or who got shot last night, that kind of stuff.
And I think you found with DNA Info that it wasn't, while you guys are covering all the neighborhoods in the city, it mattered to people outside of the city, the people that have moved to Arlington Heights and Schaumburg and Naperville, who at some point in time lived in the city or still commute and work to the city.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's nostalgia played a big part in what we did. We saw those stories would take off. Closing stories, when a bar would close in Wicker Park, we realized, you know, anyone that had ever been there before or wasted a summer there before would be interested in that story and start sharing it. So we did have a reach beyond Chicago proper and all the Chicago outposts out there, like Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys were trying to raise $25,000. Now that you've raised over $100,000 more than your goal, and think about that for a second, how does that change the thinking as you start this? I mean, you really plan on starting small. with each, you know, 10,000 more that's given, what do you plan to do to start off right away?
Yeah, one of the things that we committed to early on when we, you know, blew past our $25,000 goal in a matter of hours is we committed to hiring another reporter at $100,000. We reached that, I think, within 36 hours. So we really saw that people want to support more reporting in their neighborhoods and in a real way, right? They want to see that reporter, that person in their neighborhood. So going forward, every dollar that we spend is going to be reinvested in reporting, whether that's hiring more full-time reporters, or honestly, we now have this, because of the success of the Kickstarter, we now have a pretty substantial freelance budget that we can use to hire reporters all over the city who are experts in their neighborhoods.
Well, and that's an interesting question I want to ask you guys, because that's the tough part. DNA Info closed for a myriad of reasons, but one of them is always with journalism profitability. The Chicago Tribune, as we know, we're sitting here in the Tribune Tower where the reporters are leaving to head to another building because they sold this building off. The Sun-Times always seems to be on a last leg, right? And the financial aspects of journalism have never been worse. The need for good journalism has never been stronger, it seems. And the New York Times is reporting, I believe, record numbers of subscribers right now. So how will you guys balance out, as a not-for-profit, how you figure out hiring and how many people to have, and how important, you know, how much of that is going to weigh on you guys versus just, you know, I think with DNA Info, you were, Seamus, I know you had to deal with budgets, but you had to worry mostly about good reporting, and then the money generally was there. Now, are you going to have a lot more weight on your shoulders to figure out how you balance all this out?
Yeah, I haven't slept in three months. I wake up in a cold sweat thinking about it. No, I mean, it's, part of it is that's why we're trying to start small. We just don't want to get too far over our skis.
Sure.
And have to correct.
You don't want to end up with a pledge drive every week, right? That's the fear.
Right, exactly, right. But, you know, we're just investigating as many different revenue streams as possible.
Sure.
Let's start with just going straight to the people that read us and say, hey, do you like this? Would you be willing to contribute? We're going to go out to the foundations, the charitable foundations of Chicago and elsewhere that support local journalism, and have talked about the need for, you know, for more outlets like this. And we're going to say, all right, well, here we are. You know, we've got X number of readers, and we're committed to covering, you know, as many parts of the city as we can, you know, try to get as many of the diverse viewpoints in the city as possible. Would you be willing to contribute to that for a year, two, mm-hmm. 3 years? So, you know, any suggestions for revenue, Matt, please send them in.
Scratch-off tickets. I find scratch-off tickets work really well. If you got $125,000 already, $5 tickets, I mean, think, you probably at least win your money back.
Hey, you know, we're all in.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. That's really bad advice. You know, that's poor advice.
We want to do we want to do some events. We can actually
sure.
meet people and bring people out. So we're going to be
merchandise.
Yeah, merch. Yeah, we're gonna we're just gonna, you know, try to be as creative as possible and still be able to, you know,
yeah.
move the copy and
yeah.
get good stories.
Absolutely.
There.
So as you guys are starting out, so how many reporters as of right now? How many reporters will you hit the ground running with?
Yeah, Matt, we have 5 full-time reporters that have signed on with this. There are 3 co-founders, Seamus, myself, and the amazing Jen Sabella. Mm-hmm. And like I said, because of the outstanding, tremendous support that we've received through the Kickstarter, we will be hiring a 6th full-time reporter. We do already have a lot of freelance reporters that we've already reached out to and say, hey, is this something you would be interested in doing? So we will definitely be tapping them. And we are looking for even more.
Excellent. So how do you guys decide what you start covering first? Will there be specific neighborhoods at the kickoff, or will you do your best to cover the entire city of Chicago?
We're definitely going to focus on clusters of certain neighborhoods at the beginning, the ones that are really in the wheelhouses of the reporters that we covered. For example, the reporters that we've signed on, Elisa Hauser, our amazing Wicker Park, Bucktown, Westtown reporter. She agreed to come within like seconds of us asking her. It was a great moment. She's like, sure, I'm in. But yeah, she's going to keep covering her beat, which she's just, you know, she knows it left and right. And,
right.
And it's hilarious. Like, she'll talk about a new restaurant that opened and can name like the last 9 restaurants that failed there and which years they failed.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So yes, we're going to be specific to a lot of the neighborhoods that these reporters have already been covering, and then use the freelancers in the other neighborhoods until we can, you know, get our feet under us.
Is there a specific story from the DNA Info days that you guys can point to say this is why this type of thing makes a difference? The Chicago Tribune's great, the Sun-Times is great, the news organizations are great, but here's the type of thing that we covered and went and saw that nobody else would have gotten to, and this made a difference here in Chicago.
Yeah, Matt, you know, I think one example that I've been thinking about the last couple of days, you know, it's no secret that Chicago has a shooting problem, and you know, following the response from the Laquan McDonald shooting, a narrative from people outside of Chicago developed that Chicagoans just simply don't care about their neighborhoods, and they don't protest the violence that is happening specifically in their neighborhood. Because our reporters at DNA Info were really the eyes and ears of the neighborhood, they always had their boots on the ground. I can tell you that they had covered dozens of protests that were fighting back against violence in neighborhoods, both on the north side, on the south side, kind of everywhere. I know that I covered many in Pilsen and Little Village, and you know, there were examples of youth that were camping out on hot blocks to kind of try and quell violence in the neighborhoods. So, but you know, we were able to show that people do care, and I think it's important to show that, right? But those are the kind of stories that you might not find if you were reporting from a office downtown.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what I thought was very interesting, when DNA abruptly closed a couple of months ago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel came out and spoke about that and what a loss that was for the city. And I was really moved and stunned by that, because you guys are pain in his butt, as you should be, right? That's the job of journalists, is to keep everybody honest, especially those holding office in the city. And for him to say something positive about DNA, I thought that was very interesting. You wouldn't hear that on Pennsylvania Avenue right now. So to hear it from the Daily Building, I thought was pretty special.
Right, and it felt heartfelt. It wasn't like a good riddance.
Yeah.
We got a lot of great comments from not just from the mayor, but from the aldermen all around town, from just folks that, you know, especially the aldermen, you know, they had an outlet to get some word out, to explain a ruling or explain a vote, or, you know, or shine a spotlight on a problem in the neighborhood. So we had good relationships, at least good communication with them about anything. I mean, we were great on development stories, like, you know, like for the Children's Memorial Hospital redevelopment, we must have written, you know, hundreds of stories about that.
Yeah.
Everything from like, when are the buildings going to get knocked down, to like, where are the rats going to go,
exactly,
to like all the businesses, like the sandwich shops on Lincoln Avenue that like shut down because there were no workers,
yeah,
from the hospital, you know, buying their sandwiches anymore, which was, you know, a bizarre thing to see all these closed businesses on, you know, Lincoln Avenue and,
yeah,
you know, in the heart of Lincoln Park.
And even stories like, you know, the red light cameras and the statistical stories you guys would do, while those might be things that the bigger news organizations might do, nobody was doing the ones you guys were doing. And I think that pushed the envelope for the rest of the journalists in Chicago so much that it was a great loss when things shut down. When are we kicking off? When will we see our first Block Club Chicago stories?
We are looking for mid-April. We've teamed up with a company out in New York called Civil, and they are building out a platform. It's on the blockchain, not to get too deep into it, but it's going to be a very high-tech platform that's going to host newsrooms around the country. They've got three announced already, including us. There's one in L.A., there's one in New York, doing a bunch of different things. One's a feature site, one's an investigative site, and we've got the neighborhood news, but they're building this out. We're all going to be part of their platform, and they are targeting April for it, and then we go up with them.
Excellent. How do people, if people are hearing this and they haven't jumped on board yet, what's the best way to do that? What's the best way to get involved?
Yeah, it's very easy to subscribe. You can go to blockclubchicago.org. You can subscribe. You can find out more about our mission,
And what can you do to make sure that if you have a neighborhood here in Chicago you really want to hear about, that they get that to you guys? Like, you know, will there be a point in time? So you have six to start, and they're going to cover multiple neighborhoods. But if everybody in Inglewood thought, man, we've got it, because you guys covered Inglewood, and when nobody else is really covering Inglewood, how many people would it take in Inglewood to subscribe to make sure that there was a reporter going to Inglewood?
Yeah, I'm proud to say that we will be covering Inglewood day one. Lee Edwards is coming on board to cover that area for us. But it is very cool. We have heard from people all over the city, you know, when they pledge, they tell us, P.S. I live in this neighborhood. If there's anything you can do to cover it, we're all ears. We're listening and taking all of that feedback, and you can reach out to us on Twitter, you know, through the Kickstarter. You can email us. We are listening to where you want to see covered.
What is the Twitter handle?
It's Block Club Shy, C-H-I.
Block Club Shy. And is there a website people can go to right now, or is that not anywhere yet?
Same thing, blockclubchicago.org.
Blockclubchicago.org.
We bought like a dozen domains, Matt, so, you know, if you stumble upon the wrong one, we've got
Block Something's going to redirect you back to
Block Club Chicago. We've got blockclubshy.com.org. But the only thing we don't have is blockclub.com, because there's a nightclub in Miami called The Block. So we're like, come on. But it looks pretty cool, though, so we'll maybe that'll be our first
excellent
road trip.
Excellent. That sounds good. You know, a lot of corporations could be listening as well. How, if somebody wanted to, will there be advertisement? Would there be things like that? Are you looking for, you know, a Walgreens to say, you know, we got a Walgreens in every neighborhood, we should be supporting this?
You know, right out of the gate, we are saying we're not going to be ad driven.
Okay.
You know, it's part of the problem of being sustainable, you know, especially in local news, is that making it an ad-driven model is really, you know, tough hill to climb.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going subscriptions, and we're going to see, you know, how strong that is. You know, obviously, if someone wants to perhaps sponsor the morning newsletter, or
sure,
you know, or, you know, some kind of coverage, you know, we're not stupid,
right?
But you know,
we're turning down money over here. Is that not what we're doing?
Yeah, but I mean, we're not pushing that as
sure,
and certainly we don't want like the pop-up ads that, you know, sort of crash your phone and everything around it. So no, right now we're no ads, subscription based, and you know, super excited about it.
Excellent. Can you guys stick around just for a few more minutes? I want to take a quick break, do the news. I want to ask you a few more questions just about, because you guys have been in journalism a long time, and it's such a tough game right now. I'd like to ask you a little bit more about how that works and how you see the future going for places like Block Club Chicago, as well as the Tribune and everybody else that's out there. 312-981-7200. Quick break in the news. More with Seamus Toomey and Stephanie Lulay, the two of the co-founders of Block Club Chicago. You can follow them on Twitter at Block Club Shy, C-H-I, on Twitter, or blockclubchicago.org, and jump on that Kickstarter and pitch in. 312-981-7200 is the number. After the news, we're going to talk more with Stephanie Lulay and Seamus Toomey about Block Club Chicago. You can find out more by going to blockclubchicago.org or follow them on Twitter at blockclubshy, C-H-I. 312-981-7200. Texter says, from 815, says, it'd be really cool if they branched out and did all Chicagoland area eventually with the suburbs. Before we go to the news, let me ask you about that. Now, I know that is bigger, but that was one thing DNA Info didn't do. We didn't cover Schaumburg. We didn't cover Roselle and places like that. In the grand scheme, is this always just neighborhoods, or would you like to get a Arlington Heights and a Orland Park type thing going?
Well, I think sort of our secret sauce is being able to go down to that micro level, to go to that board meeting that no one else goes to. So it gets a lot harder the bigger the further out you get. But having said that, you know, it's not, you know, sort of would never say never.
Yeah.
But it does obviously gets harder and harder. I used to work at the Daily Herald and they still do that sort of micro level coverage. And, you know, you need a person per suburb at least.
Right.
You know, and that person's got to cover the police, and they got to cover the school board, and they got to cover the park district, and they got to cover the Chamber of Commerce. And it is a lot of work, and it gets expensive.
And sometimes those suburbs are a lot bigger than the different little neighborhoods that we have here in Chicago. That's for sure. Right. Especially when you get to Naperville, it's basically almost another Chicago.
Exactly. Right. That's not a one reporter town. No, no way.
All right, we'll talk more to these guys after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Let's get the news now. Here's Pamela Jones. Six in the afternoon on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Brian Noonan until 7 o'clock tonight. Thanks for being with us, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on the Magnificent Mile in the historic Chicago Tribune Tower building, where the Chicago Tribune is moving out, where WGN Radio will soon be moving out. There's a lot of changes in the media landscape. Of course, a couple of months ago, DNAinfo.com closed down, but the editors and the head local chiefs of DNA Info have gotten back together to form Block Club Chicago. Seamus Toomey and Stephanie Lule are in studio with me right now, who, along with Jen Sabella, put this whole... what happened here? Who called somebody in the middle of the night and said, we're putting the band back together? It was a real Blues Brothers moment, I'm guessing.
Somewhat. You know, what happened was we closed on a Thursday night. We had a staff meeting on Friday. And
then you guys got drunk for about 3 days that other journalist paid for, which was one of the most moving and weird moments in Chicago history.
That was bizarre.
Like, it was cool, though.
The entire city bought us a drink.
Yes.
And we were, like, thankful
and
for
we
it.
Drank them all.
Yes, you did.
And we came within, like... Honestly, they raised Lisa White, our dear friend Lisa White, started fundraising, and she raised like $3,200 for our bar tab, and we're like, this is going to be great. We're going to split it and give it away, and we spent like $3,190. It was like 4 hours. Yeah, so. Ouch. We were not going to do that with the Kickstarter, though.
I promise you, Chicago. Yes, good. But so how did it come together? So
when the sort of the smoke cleared from that weekend, I had to come back into work to start closing up shop, and I started getting phone calls from people that were saying this was too good to let go.
Yeah,
anything from charitable foundations to venture capital, a bunch of great inspiring people calling and saying, you know, what do you have in mind? And that's when it really dawned on us, like, you know what, let's start looking into, maybe not leaving this audience behind. And we heard from so many people on social media and email, text, everywhere, phone calls, just saying, you know, this was great. We're so sorry to see you go. So it really sort of galvanized us to say, let's find out a way to do this.
Now, Steph, was this scary for you? Is it like, no, I got to find a full-time job with benefits and all these things. I'm just getting out of the dangers. Because this is, you guys are taking a lot on here. You're starting your own shop. And so that could be incredible or it could be very difficult for many years. Was it tough or were you like, no, I love this so much, I'm on no matter what it is?
It wasn't just scary. It was terrifying, right? And I think it still is. But like Seamus said, we received such an outpouring of support and over the last 3 months. And at the time, you're hearing from people and you think maybe just this small group of people feels this way. But I am hearing from so many people. But I think now that we've seen the Kickstarter, we've seen in real life that, people all over the city do want something like this. And I got to say, on a personal level, thank you, because it makes it a little bit less scarier. We see that our former readers are coming along for the ride with us.
Yeah. So about 100, closing in on $150,000 on the Kickstarter campaign. You've teamed up with a group called, what's the group in New York called?
Civil.
And they'll help build the platform. So hopefully sometime in mid-April or so, we start launching stories. Do you guys have in mind right now the first story? You don't have to tell us what it is, but do you know what's kicking off Block Club Chicago?
Oh, we have so many ideas, and our reporters, God bless them, have so many ideas. It is very hard for them to sit still. They're neighborhood reporters. So the list is so long, and the great thing is, because we don't launch till mid-April, they will have quite a bit of time to report out some great neighborhood stories in the meantime.
Yeah,
and here's my prediction, Matt. We'll spend 2 months planning on what those big first couple stories are going to be, and the night before something's going to break, and that'll be the one we'll go with.
All right, I'm going to ask you guys a difficult question you didn't see coming. Has Donald Trump saved journalism?
We're both looking at each other.
Now, hear me out on this. So the media has been falling apart because of the internet and the people that had all the big corporations didn't know what the hell to do with it. There were bad mergers and incredible debt taken on all these things, right, that are killing all the major media institutions. And while Donald Trump is threatening journalists and threatening the Second Amendment and all of these things, I'm sorry, the First Amendment, he's good on the second, all of these things that he is doing, he's also driving people to want good journalism more than to care about journalists and good journalism more than we probably have in forever. And the New York Times reported that their digital subscriptions, I believe, are through the roof. And I think the Washington Post is doing really well, too. So in some odd, weird way, I know it's going to be hard to go along with, but I think he has helped journalism. He didn't mean to by any means, but I think he's certainly brought more attention to journalists and good journalism.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. He's definitely reinvigorated, not just, national reporting, international reporting, But yes, I mean, I didn't have a Washington Post subscription until this past year, but there was just so many great stories every day that I needed to read that I said, okay, I find value in this. This is worth, you know, whatever it is, $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
So yes, you know, the world, I feel like they need more reporters. They need more outlets telling stories, not less, and that, you know, that plays into what we're trying to do. Like, we don't want to be fewer and fewer places telling Chicago stories, even if they're, you know, silly stories from the neighborhood or whatever, you know, stories that only matter to a couple thousand people. Like, those are the stories we want to tell because no one else is doing it, and it's, you know, there's an opportunity for us to go in there. Plus, it's a lot of fun.
And while DNA Info was exceedingly good at doing the silly little stories, like the tree that was being decorated along Lakeshore Drive for the last summer and why this one water fountain does not work in Grant Park and things like that, you guys also pushed them on red light cameras and amounts of police officers there was a lot of great reporting from City Hall. This won't just be, I'm guessing, a subscription to local neighborhoods, but I imagine you guys will still cover City Hall as intensely in the Chicago Police Department and schools and everything like that, like you used to. Is that right?
Well, I mean, we really hope to, you know, eventually be as strong as we were at DNA Info. But, you know, the reality is that we are a smaller staff at the beginning. So our initial focus is going to be the neighborhoods. The more that we can expand into the beats and the courts and the you know, we will go there. Right now, you know, our dedication is to putting the neighborhood reporters out there first. But they're all general assignment reporters. You know, they cover the crimes and the fires and the coffee shops and the businesses and the funny painted trees and all that stuff. So, yes, they're just going to, you know, open up their arms and grab as many stories from their geographic boundaries as possible.
Yeah. It's so good to have you guys in the studio. It's so good that the alums of DNA Info are back. Block Club Chicago. Follow them on Twitter at Block Club Shy. BlockClubChicago.org. Join the Kickstarter. If you give, how much do you get a subscription for
$50
the first year?
$50, and you get a tote bag, which, you know, tote bag. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, who does not need a tote bag?
Everyone needs a tote bag.
You could carry around your snow in the tote bag. That's how you move it off the driveway right now. Seamus Toomey and Stephanie Lule, look for Block Club Chicago kicking off soon. Join the Kickstarter now and be part of the revolution in journalism that they are bringing forth. Guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Texter asks if they will still do restaurant reviews. I'm sure the neighborhood reporters will be doing restaurant reviews in their neighborhoods. Well, they'll be talking about the restaurants that open, at the very least. I don't know if they'll be reviewing them or not. 630 says, the trouble with journalism is it has become more tabloid and opinion-driven instead of fact-finding. That was the interesting thing about the whole basis for DNA Info, is their whole mission was to just report the news on what was going on, and they were very pushed to do that by the owners of DNA Info, and I believe succeeded very well at that. In fact, I used to do radio interviews for DNA Info. That's how I know these guys. And then I did the neighborhood news here at GN. And so my job was to call the reporters after they did a story and then interview them about it. And I want to talk about, well, what'd you think? What'd you like? And they'd be like, well, I can only tell you that, you know, and it was very frustrating for a while because I'd be talking to these guys, be like, well, I can't talk about what I thought about it. I'm just reporting on it. So they were very good at making sure to report the news and not just talk about what they thought about it. It was very, very much fact-driven, and I'm sure that the new Block Club Chicago will be the same way. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the news at 4:30, we're going to get Phil Rogers on the phone. So the Cubs sign Yu Darvish, and now are they ready to make a big run at it? And what do you think about Jake Arrieta? Is that just dead now in the water? Do we not worry about Jake Arrieta anymore? Phil Rogers, you remember from your Chicago Tribune. He's now the national writer for MLB.com, but he writes a lot about the Cubs and the Sox and everything else. We'll talk to us about Yu Darvish and what's going to happen to the rest of the free agents now that we have gotten that far along. All right. Let's talk real quick, and we'll get back to, I promise we'll get back to the movies that most upset you when people died. and the TV shows a little bit later in the show. But what are the most and least stressful jobs in 2018? And it's funny, you know, we were talking to a couple of reporters here for the last hour. Reporter is on the list of the most stressful jobs, which shouldn't be surprising because, let's face it, it has been a contentious couple of years ever since that election back in 2016 for reporters. Broadcaster, which, newspaper reporter comes in at the sixth most stressful job for people to have right now. The most stressful job, of course, and it makes sense, is enlisted military personnel. How could that not be the most stressful? You're literally putting your life in the hands of your country and being willing to sacrifice your life for our freedom. So that has to be the most stressful. Also doesn't pay that well, but it's there. Firefighter, of course, another stressful job. Number three is airline pilot. I don't know whether to be surprised by that or not. I imagine the airline pilots, I never think of having to deal with the everyday stresses other than the flying. And the flying can be stressful, I'm sure. And I wonder if you broke that down, because we hear about how pilots start out these days and the regional airlines. I've talked to some airline pilot guys on the overnight show, and you know, pilots starting out these days, they don't make much money. They often have a ton of debt from pilot schools and the training, and they'll start out at a regional carrier. So they'll be making, you know, the Chicago to Kalamazoo flight three times a day or once a day or whatever. And literally, I've heard of pilots making like $26,000 to $35,000 a year until they eventually work their way up to the bigger airlines and the bigger planes. So my guess is if you broke that down, I wonder, a pilot with 20 years experience, it might be a much less stressful job than a pilot with 5 to 10 years of experience. I also wonder how much pilots have to actually deal with what's going on in the plane. You know, you see the flight attendant should be on here. Flight attendant has to be one of the most stressful jobs out there these days. Number four is police officer, although it pays well and there's good growth. Of course, another job where you're putting your life at risk. The fifth most stressful job, I never would have guessed this. I know it's stressful, but I wouldn't think it's so stressful that is event coordinator. An event coordinator is listed as the fifth most stressful job. And I think a lot of people think, oh, wouldn't that be fun? We'll put on parties, we'll organize weddings, birthday parties, this and that. But it is listed as the fifth most stressful job you could have, event coordinator. Newspaper reporter comes in at number six. They also, when they did this survey, which was put together by CareerCast, also listed the growth potential of these jobs, like police officers growing at 7%, airline pilot at 4%, firefighter at 7%, event coordinator growing by 10%. So there's good growth potential there. Newspaper reporter, -11%. And that's part of the problem we're talking about and why all these organizations need to be a little more creative about how they bring in the dollars to sustain their operations. Newspaper reporter, -11%, sixth most stressful job in the country. Broadcaster coming in at number seven. It's not that stressful, but I imagine there are times it could be, and it depends on what you're doing. Public relations executive, number eight, very high paying job, average salary of $107,000, growth rate of 10%, but still very stressful. Number nine, kind of a bland title, senior corporate executive, with a pay of about $181,000 and 8% growth potential, but apparently it's very stressful being a senior corporate executive. And number 10, taxi driver. Even though there's 5% growth, you can imagine how stressful it is, and I think especially in the days of Uber and Lyft, and I don't know if when they say taxi driver, they're counting rideshare services. I'm imagining they are not, but you can imagine how stressful it is to be a taxi cab driver. So what are the least stressful jobs out there? What is a job I can slide into, make a couple bucks, and relax at the end of the day? Number one, diagnostic medical sonographer. Diagnostic medical sonographer. Let's see what they wrote about that a little bit, because you're like, what is that? The least stressful job, diagnostic medical sonographer, isn't merely conducting pregnancy ultrasounds, they say. Their days may include the task of cancer screenings, which can add stress to the job. So there is some stress involved, but apparently not enough to make it not the most least stressful job you can get. With a 17% growth rate, it's a good job to go into, $64,000 average annual salary. That's not bad. The growth outlook at 17% positive. Second least stressful job, and I'm surprised by this, hairstylist. Hairstylists, while they only make an average of $24,000 a year, there's a growth of 10%, only registers a 6 on the stress index. And I imagine you're talking, and you have to have the right personality, though. You are really a salesperson if you're a hairstylist. You're bringing in customers. You need these regular customers. So you have to keep them happy. You have to do their hair right. You have to, you know the trends and things like that. I would think that would be a little more stressful. So hairstylists having a good life, apparently. Number three is audiologist. At a $75,000 annual salary, $75,000, that's pretty good. 20% growth rate. If you have a child or a grandchild looking to go into college, tell them to Google audiologist. Seems like there might be something to that. Number four, fourth least stressful job, university professor. I could see that. My professors never seem very stressed out. You get tenure, you do what you want, you're making good money. I don't know. I like that idea. Now, a university professor would probably call and say you're all wrong about that. But 15% growth rate, 75 grand a year, that's pretty good. Medical records technician, fifth least stressful job. I imagine as a medical records technician, you might not be dealing with the public a lot. You're only making $38,000, but there is a 13% growth rate. Compliance officer is the sixth least stressful job. I can't imagine any job with officer in the title being not stressful, but they say that's sixth. A jeweler. Is the seventh least stressful job. I imagine that's a lot of happy times. I want an engagement ring. I want to buy something for this or that. So maybe it's a lot of happiness. They only make an average of $38,000 a year. But here's the negative one on this. Negative 3% growth rate for jewelers. So if you're thinking, hey, jeweler, that sounds like fun. I like jewelry. It's artistic. But a negative 3% growth rate. So that could be a tougher one to find the job. Pharmacy technician. I imagine those are the people that help the pharmacists. $30,000 average annual salary, 12% growth rate, eighth least stressful job. Ninth is operations research analyst, which I imagine means you're looking at a lot of data and reporting on it. 79 grand is an average salary there. Medical laboratory technician comes in at number 10, can make about 50 grand a year and a 12% growth rate. So there you go. Those are the things that you should be thinking about if you want to find a stressful or least stressful job. I don't imagine a lot of people are looking at, well, give me the more stressful one. I need some more stress in my life. But if the money's there, 630 texts, what? I'm an echosonographer, and it is very stressful. If I don't get the right information, the patient doesn't get the right treatment, makes me question the whole study. All right. Fair enough. But I imagine it was done by... How did they do this? I imagine it was a questionnaire that people filled out. CareerCast annual survey. So it was a survey. So sonographers apparently didn't seem as stressed out as you do, 630. You take it more seriously than everybody else, and good for you. Good for you. That's what you need to do. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're going to try to check in with our buddy Phil Rogers from MLB.com after the news and see what's going on with the latest in the hot stove. Major League Baseball, Yu Darvish signs with the Cubs. Pending a physical. Will everybody else start falling into place? We'll find out after the news. Let's get upstairs right now, 4:30 in the afternoon. Here are the headlines with Pamela Jones. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Pam, I got to ask you a question. So I swear to God, at 3 o'clock, I introduced you as Pamela Jones. You signed out as Pam Jones. And then I introduced you later as Pam Jones. That. You signed out as Pamela Jones. Are you just trying to confuse me up there?
No, that's user area. One is short for the other. Come on.
But you're cool with either or? You're
one.
Pam
I'm
or
cool
Pamela?
With either one. Let's go with Pam. You know, I guess when things are really, really starting to break down on me, I go to Pamela because my mother's in my head. And she's like,
Pamela!
Hey, Jones, what the heck was that on the radio?
Pamela Jones, you get that right now.
Exactly.
Okay,
so that's what happens. But yeah, Pam, as I get older, I want to revert to Pam. When I was young, I kind of wanted to be older.
I wanted to feel an adult. I wanted to be respected more.
Exactly.
And people take me seriously. I'm
right.
Pamela.
Now you know what?
And now I'm Pam.
Pam. And you know what? PJ. You know, that becomes very
that's when
common.
You really, people when we really PJ. Get into midlife crisis, we'll
right,
become PJ
right?
And, yeah. And Maddie. I'll yeah. be Maddie.
Exactly.
Just call
See,
me Maddie. Yeah,
you missed
I'm young
it. Last
and hip.
Week, I actually wore PJ bottoms to work.
Did
yeah.
you really?
Yeah, in the snow. Yeah, sure did. Nobody noticed.
Well, let's face it. I'm on the radio and I am sitting at a desk, so there's
That's
not
right.
much going on here. I can
That's
wear
right.
the PJs. It's fine, everybody.
In one television market, they used to call us the waist up girls because we would only be dressed up from the waist up.
I did an internship at Fox 42 in Omaha, Nebraska
oh
when
my gosh,
I was in college.
I was in Omaha.
Get out of here.
Yes, at KETV 7. Yeah.
I was at Fox 42, I think
okay.
it was. And I remember that the female anchor would have on this blazer and this blouse and incredible, you know, just looked all, you know, business-like. And then she walked out from behind the desk with like short shorts on or something and flip-flops.
And everybody wore flip-flops and gym shoes because your feet are important in news. You got to be comfortable to be able to hit those streets running.
Yeah.
Literally.
It's so funny. It's so funny. Yeah. The things you don't know that go on behind the scenes.
That's right. I'll just have to get up and dance at the next song so you can see what I'm wearing.
There you
actually
go.
Today's not really interesting. I had jeans on, but I do have snow boots.
Okay, well, fair enough. You're dressed for the weather, if nothing else,
right?
That's
right. That's right.
We'll check back in with you at 5 o'clock. Right now, let's jump on the phone with Phil Rogers. He writes for MLB.com. You remember him certainly from his time here at the Chicago Tribune, a long time at the Chicago Tribune. Phil jumps on the phone right now. Hey, Phil, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for being with us. So the hot stove finally breaks and heats up a little bit. You, Darvish, I know this isn't officially late. Is there any chance that the physical is going to go awry? Is there any concern about that, or do we think this is a done deal? Yu Darvish is a Cub.
No, I think it's a done deal. It would be a major surprise. You know, last year he threw harder than he has any time in North America. His velocity was 95 miles an hour. He held it there. I would say there's very little question about him physically. I mean, he is a Tommy John survivor. But he's got that about 3 years in the past now, and I don't think it's a concern at all.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this then, because the one concern was the World Series. Darvish got lit up by the Astros, but people are saying he was tipping his pitches, and that can be corrected. Is there any concern about that one appearance? Because he did make the Cubs look bad when they played him, but the World Series went another way for you. So what happened there?
Yeah, it wasn't just one appearance either. He had two starts where the Astros teed off on him. Number one, the Astros are a great hitting lineup. Number two, if you face the same pitcher twice, that's an advantage for the hitters the second time around. And number three, they clearly had picked up something with him, and their hitters had, at the very least, a great approach against him, or they actually knew what pitches he was about to throw. And so he was pretty severely compromised by that. But to start at Wrigley Field in the championship series, game three of the championship series, I've seen Darvish quite a bit. I was at his debut for the Texas Rangers, and I've watched him quite a bit. And, I think that start for the Dodgers at Wrigley Field is as strong of an outing as I've ever seen him have. I mean, he pitched into the seventh inning, which doesn't sound like a lot, except this is a period when the Dodgers were hoping to get Clayton Kershaw through the fifth inning. You know, they were going to go to their bullpen quick. And Darvish just kept the Cubs quiet. And this was actually a game, the way the National Series, the Division Series ended, and the Cubs traveled across country, one travel day, and then that series started. I think they were pretty much gassed those first two games in L.A., and they came back to Wrigley Field, and I thought this was a game they were going to score some runs, turn things around, and make this a good series. And instead, Darvish just mowed them down. And he had, his fastball is 95-96. His velocity was up last year while Jake Arrieta's was down, and he just looked so sharp. All of his breaking pitches, there had been a vulnerability. Left-handed hitters have been hitting this curveball when he was with the Rangers, but he's now throwing it, getting it deeper in the strike zone, lower, and adjustment with the Dodgers. May have changed his arm slot a little bit after he was traded from the Rangers to the Dodgers. And he looked great. So the World Series, I would look at more as a just kind of an outlier. I mean, it was two starts, so that's what, if it had been one start, you would definitely throw it out. But I don't think it's a big concern what happened with him there. And I definitely think he was the top free agent arm on the market. And so the Cubs went out and did what the Cubs do. They got the top free agent arm.
Now, the Cubs had supposedly offered Jake Arrieta 4 years at $80 million. Do you think that was a legitimate offer that they had made? And what happens now to Jake Arrieta now that Darvish has signed?
Well, I think with Arrieta, I think had go back in time a year or two, had Arrieta been anxious to sign an extension and to get on the free agent market, he might be the guy that's there instead of Darvish, but he wanted to get the opportunity at free agency, get his maximum value. My understanding with the Cubs was they were waiting. They had told Scott Boras, I doubt that 480 was an actual offer. My understanding is they had told Scott Boras, if you want to talk about a shorter contract, let us know and we'll have those talks. I don't think they had gotten that phone call. So I think, they had indicated to Boras and to Arrieta that, under some circumstances they have an interest in him, let us know. But I don't think those talks ever really happened. And now, the most intriguing scenario would be Jake Arrieta going to the St. Louis Cardinals, yeah. or the Milwaukee Brewers. I think both of those things are possibilities. You hear more these days with the Brewers trying to add another starting pitcher than you do the Cardinals, but the Cardinals have the payroll flexibility to do it. And if anybody thought the Cubs were vulnerable to either of those other two teams pre-Darvish, now you plug Darvish in, and the Cubs clearly have the best starting pitching in that division, along with a lot of their other advantages. Especially if you stack them up right now with the Brewers, who, I loved Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain. I like a lot that the Brewers have done, but if you stack those two rotations up side by side, it's really, really hard to see the Brewers challenging the Cubs. Now, they don't have to win the division to be a postseason team, and that's the beauty of the wild card. But I think the Cubs have really, with the Darvish signing, if they weren't already outdistanced from the other teams in the division, and I kind of think they might have been anyway, this really does, I think, put the other teams, on notice. They either have to make a big, bold acquisition on their own, or they're more or less playing for a wild card spot, not a division title.
Is there any chance that Arrieta ends up with the Dodgers now that the Dodgers have a big starter that just left them?
I don't think so, because the Dodgers have been very, very clear all along about the $197 million competitive balance tax threshold, that they want to get under that this year, which will give them a clean slate for next year's free agent class. Mm. I think they would have done some things differently, including, maybe trying to lock Darvish up. I think they've been very transparent from the first of this free agent period, saying, this isn't a year we're going to be very aggressive. And so I don't see that changing. I do think Jake is a Texan. Went to high school in the Dallas area, pitched college ball at TCU. The Texas Rangers are a team that I could see finding some money and stepping up and signing Arrieta. They are a long way behind the Houston Astros at this point, but they're one of those teams that isn't going to rebuild. They're going to try to go into this year and see what they can do. And their rotation is really, really thin. And so, again, they're a team that has not had a lot of money and not been aggressive in this free agent market. But you could certainly make a strong case for Arrieta as a piece they should be interested in. The team that needs him the most, and that needs starting the pitching the most, is the one Arrieta came from, the Baltimore Orioles. Mm-hmm. That's another team that refuses to rebuild. And if you look at their depth chart of starting pitchers, it's about two starters deep. So, they're a team I do expect to go out somewhere, add one or two starting pitchers between now and the start of the season.
Well, you mentioned that the Rangers hadn't been very aggressive. Nobody's been very aggressive so far in free agency, right? That's the story of free agency. Players talking about collusion and, is this a bad deal? They're going to open up their own spring training camp for the players that haven't signed. What will Darvish's signing do to this? And what do you make of all that? Are the owners just being smart, or are the players finally pushing for too much? Where do you fall on that?
Well, I think it's more the first than the latter, although I think the players, I think there, you know, Major League Baseball is being run by bankers right now, bankers and lawyers. It's like they're all, you know, these top analysts, and, you know, the risk that come with long-term deals, there aren't many teams that are willing to step up and make those kind of Goldman Sachs is specifically what I was going to mention. They're run by Goldman Sachs bankers. And, you know, I think, you know, we don't have the wild owner anymore who's just going to, like, step in and wants to really throw his weight around. It seems like, you know, more and more teams are, you know, which is good business. You know, they're hiring Theo Epstein-type player personnel guys, whether you want to call them GM or president of baseball operations, whatever they are, and then owners are getting the heck out of the way and letting those guys make decisions. And so I think there's a lot less risk-taking. I think the culture now discourages risk, where in the past it's been a very risk-taking culture. And, you know, I think the players were have been slow. You know, props to Darvish for finally making a decision, because I was beginning to wonder if any free agent player would make a decision. And, you know, I think they keep waiting and waiting and thinking that the owners are bluffing, and that, you know, when you get right around the spring training, all of a sudden people's value is going to spike to where they thought it was going to be coming into this off season. And you could actually go back to last off season. There were trends. This was happening. I mean, this isn't coming straight out of nowhere. I mean, you look at the Dexter Fowler, go back 2 years to when Dexter Fowler didn't get an offer and wound up coming to camp with the Cubs, you know, after spring training was already going. I mean, there's been some of this in recent years. And, you know, every team values the minor leaguers so much. That's a big part of it, that, you know, every team is competing to collect the biggest inventory and the best inventory of players that are 23 years old and younger. And, you know, as a result, they're not as quick to trade those guys, and they're, you know, not as quick to go out and sign somebody that's 30 years old. I mean, you know, when Joe Maddon signed with the Cubs as manager, he had the line, 60 is the new 40. But for players now, it's like 30 is the new 40. Like, I mean, I think owners would much rather plug in young guys than to just kind of patchwork it with 30-year-old veteran-type players. So the market is really bad. There's a lot of really good players out there. I'll throw Melky Cabrera with the White Sox out there as an example of a really good baseball player whose name you've almost never heard this off season. And, you know, there are going to be a lot of guys who ended last year expecting to be major leaguers in 2019 who are going to look up, and there's just no spots for them.
Well, you know, the word collusion's been thrown around with the owners, but could it be thrown around with the players and the agents? Is Scott Boras kind of holding everything back here because he doesn't like, you know, is this the standoff? Is it maybe not the owner so much as you know, this is somewhat the reality now, and the agents are pushing it too far?
Well, I mean, Scott Boras does control a number of the top free agents that are out there. So, you know, when you look at the Boras guys, and Yu Darvish was not a Boras guy, if you look at the Boras guys, I mean, historically they've been very slow to sign. And, you know, he's going to fight this very, very hard. So, yeah, that's where I would just go. Stubbornness. I wouldn't go with collusion, but, you know, I think players, you know, have good there have been a lot of good offers on the table, good options, but they're not the absolute top of the market, ultimate best case scenario that players, as they were playing their way to free agency, thought would be out there for them. So it's been a bitter pill for them to lower their sights. And, you know, I think you can, you know, I think the players approach, I think they've been slow to make an adjustment to, you know, this current market. And, you know, maybe these, the middle tier free agents, you know, those guys should be grabbing jobs. I mean, I don't, you know, they may not be what they want, but, you know, you can go to a camp with a team, have a good year, and then get your contract, you know, right back. Adrian Beltre, who's going to go into the Hall of Fame 1 year, signed a 1 year contract. So, yeah, I think the players do probably need to be more aggressive in making sure they have landing spots, you know, when the season starts.
Is part of it next year's free agent crop? Because we've got, who do we have? We have Bryce Harper available next year. Is Kershaw going to be a free agent after this season,
well,
too?
Well, he can opt out after next year and probably should if he has a good year. You know, Manny Machado, Josh Donaldson. It is a very rich free agent year, and this wasn't an especially good one. You know, there's not compared to, you know, years past, the name, you know, like if you look at the top free agent hitters that aren't signed now, J.D. Martinez, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, these are all guys, if you go back and look over the last 3 or 4 years, many, you know, they weren't always considered top-tier guys. I mean, J.D. Martinez has been a late-blooming guy that got into his power as he got to about age 30. Hosmer has been a very complete all-around player, but doesn't hit a lot of home runs. Mike Moustakas just suddenly jumped up and had a lot of power last year. So, I mean, it is true that these guys, and maybe because it's an off-year, free agent-wise, if you're the top of the class, you think you're going to get paid like the top of previous classes.
Yeah.
But I think the players have been judged on their individual merits. I like all of those players, but, you know, are they going to be 6 and 7 year guys with 25 or 30 million a year? That's pushing it. You know, J.D. Martinez is not that good in the field. I mean, I think in Boston, he would play left field, and I think they would move Benintendi to center, and then Jackie Bradley Jr. probably becomes a fourth outfielder or is traded. But 2 years from now, he might be a designated hitter. He's just not a plus defensive player. And that's another part of the thing, too. I think this bears mentioning is, I think, baseball is really valuing complete players. Theo Epstein is the guy that does that. If you look at the guys the Cubs sign and bring in, and maybe Kyle Schwarber is an outlier in this discussion, but, you know, they're complete players that are good fielders, good hitters, run the bases pretty well. They're not one-dimensional guys. And, you know, I think a number of these free agents we're looking at aren't necessarily the complete players, Jason Hayward had such value as a free agent because he was such a complete player. I think if you have a flaw, like for J.D. Martinez, it would be that he's been judged a below average outfielder in the defensive metrics, then it's really hard to get the top of the market contract.
Well, Jason Hayward might be an example of why teams aren't as willing to commit anymore, because he came in as such a top free agent, but the double plays and the way his hitting has fallen off has really maybe made other teams think, do we want to commit that much to these guys, right?
So, well, I mean, 8 year contract he got, that was crazy. But there
hell
were
of a contract.
He may have turned down more from the Cardinals.
Wow.
And the San Francisco Giants were in there bidding very heavily for him. So it wasn't just the Cubs that threw that at him. That was kind of where the market went with him. And if he was hitting 25 home runs a year and doing everything else he's done, I don't think people would look at him the way they do.
They wouldn't, yeah.
But here's the way I look at the contract. You know, I've heard people raise the length of Yu Darvish's contract and say it's too long. And, obviously Hayward is a very long contract. My guess is he'll wind up, the Cubs will wind up paying him to play for another team or just paying and releasing him. Yeah. He has 6 years left to run on it. And unless there's some big swing around, You know, I don't think he'll still be there. But the year we're talking about, when the Darvish deal ends and when the Hayward deal ends, is 2023. And do you think any Cub fans are really that concerned about what happens in 2023 at that point? I mean, we all just want to be alive. And, you know, to sweat stuff so much that you're worried about they won't have any payroll flexibility in 2023, I'd say give me a break. I mean, they'll figure stuff out between now and 2023.
Quite honestly, Phil, if anyone could tell us that Hayward's rain delay speech is what got the Cubs the first World Series victory in 108 years, I think we'd say 8 years worth of whatever is fine. We got that one World Series, right?
Well, I said when they signed him, and there were people that pointed at the size of the contract, and many of them were from St. Louis who did this, by the way. But, I said if the Cubs win one World Series while he's there, the contract would have paid for itself.
It's
and
true.
I think that's being borne out. I mean, I don't know how you factor in all the money, but the revenue the Cubs are setting themselves up for by winning that World Series, but with a new TV contract or TV station to go online in 2 years, all the improvements at Wrigley Field, just this whole era of crazy good feeling over the 2016 season, I think you would, I think an owner would have paid $100 million, have that happen.
It turned out okay.
How you value his contribution to it, is if you want to do it just pure statistics, or, that's really not the way to do it, because he perfectly epitomized the unselfish, team-first nature of a team that pulled on the rope, at the same time enough to win 103 games in the regular season and 11 in the postseason. Yeah. So, I do think, I don't think he's in any danger of becoming Milton Bradley anytime soon in terms of how he's looked at by Cub fans.
No, he's got one thing Milton will never have, and so that will save him forever, no matter how many double plays he hits into over the next 5 years. Phil Rogers,
One quick thought with him. Why don't they try him as a leadoff guy?
Tried everybody else.
I think in spring training he's going to get a look as a leadoff guy, and I think that he can fit there better than anywhere in the middle of the order. So if he's not going to be a number 8 or 9 hitter, why not take a look at him as a leadoff guy? Because he can have good at bats and work counts, and he still runs the bases pretty well. I'd like to see him get a look at, as in that leadoff spot.
You would think it makes more sense than Kyle Schwarber at the top of the order, right?
Yeah, but I got to be honest. I endorsed that going into last year too. I did not see, what I didn't see with Schwarber, and I think it happened with the Cubs too, was just the effect of basically missing the 2016 season.
Yeah.
And what he came back and did in the World Series, we thought, he looks like he's going to be able to pick it back up. But baseball is such a game of repetition and habit, and you take a guy that's played so many games his whole life, and then all of a sudden now 1 year he's going to play less than, probably, how many games did he play? 4 in the World Series and 2 in the regular season?
I think
so. He plays 6 games in 1 year. We should have seen it coming that he was going to have an adjustment period ahead of him, certainly at the start of the year, and instead putting a leadoff spot, it kind of put extra focus on him, and he was asked to do different things. That was a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, it all worked out for 1 year. We'll see if the Cubs get back into it. I'm out of time. Phil Rogers, you can read him at MLB.com. Phil is a great follow on Twitter if you're loving the baseball stuff, at Phil G. Rogers on Twitter. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone today, Phil.
All right. Thanks.
All right, sir. We'll talk to you again soon. That's Phil Rogers, national baseball writer for MLB.com. It's 5:01. Hey, I forgot to tell you, at 4:30, the news was sponsored by Illinois Condo HOA Conference and Expo. That was the 4:30 news, sponsored by Illinois Condo HOA Conference and Expo. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Mueller Volkswagen. Let's get upstairs to Pamela Jones. Thank you very much, Pamela Jones. 5:05
Yes, Pamela, not Pam, right?
I'm going to go with Pamela. I'm going to go Pamela right now.
I got in trouble again. See, there was something that happened that you guys didn't hear, really. And yeah, I got in trouble again. So I heard my mom saying Pamela Jones.
Who'd you get in
Pamela
trouble
Renee
with?
Renee Jones. Myself. Because something didn't click right.
During that newscast?
Roger Vadish is coming up next, and he is going to show me all the ropes.
Something didn't click during that newscast?
Yeah, something just didn't click.
We didn't take a break.
Yeah, that
that's
was
what it was.
Yeah. I copied over
that's
some
okay.
stories.
That's
I didn't
okay.
I was thinking about that. I was like, just keep going.
Just keep going.
Going.
Just, keep, like, just, yeah, keep swimming,
just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
Hey, oh, well. I got something for you and Roger to look into. So this came in a text. I didn't get a chance to tell you, but somebody says from 708 that incoming and outgoing flights are canceled at Midway, that Southwest Airlines has run out of de-icer.
Whoa. That would be big news.
That would
be checking
big news.
On
so
that
please
coming up.
Check
yes.
on that, and we'll get back to all of you out in their radio land as soon as we have an update from the newsroom. Don't let Roger get you into trouble up there. He is nothing but trouble.
He's awesome, dude. He's,
no,
he's
no.
like the
don't
best.
Let him suck you in like that. Don't drink
like
that Kool-Aid, Pamela.
Honest to God, he really is.
Oh,
seriously.
God. Don't flatter him like
I'm
that.
Like, yeah, doing that. Yeah.
Oh,
can Lord. You see me in the studio camera?
I'm turning it off.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thanks.
All right, Pamela. Thank you so much. Have a great night. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks again to Phil Rogers. Again, follow Phil at Phil G. Rogers on Twitter, our national baseball writer for MLB.com, or he was the national baseball writer at the Tribune. I don't know what he's called technically at MLB.com, but he writes about the Cubs and the Sox and everything else. And the Yu Darvish signing was certainly a big one, and maybe he'll get things moving a little more forcefully. Coming up in a little bit, Andrew Wittenberg is a reporter for KSL in Salt Lake City, Utah. He's out in Pyeongchang at the Winter Olympics. We'll check in live with him. It's, what is it? It is 8:07 in the morning in Pyeongchang. So that is quite the time difference. So we'll check in with him as the next day, as we watch today's events tonight, he will start talking about tomorrow's events, which are about to start. I know that doesn't make sense, but we'll get to that. And also, we will get back earlier in the show. If you're with us, we were talking about moments on television and in movies or theater that just tore you apart when people died. People are texting about Old Yeller and Bambi and different movies and TV shows because, of course, you remember just last week after the Super Bowl on This Is Us, they finally showed us how Jack died, and some people were moved to tears. One of the former producers here at WGN did something pretty funny for his wife. I'll tell you about that in a little bit as well. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you in for Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Oh, hello, everybody. Hey, by the way, you remember how the Indianapolis Colts got left standing at the altar? Josh McDaniels, who is the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, agreed to become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. I believe they had even hired assistants and stuff that were going to be part of his staff. And then allegedly Bill Belichick talks him into staying. So right before, you know, the Colts already announced there's going to be a press conference, everything like that. And then he says, no, you know what? I'm not going to take the job. I'm staying here. Colts not happy about that. They have hired a new coach, Frank Reich, who led the Buffalo Bills to their biggest comeback in NFL history against the Houston Oilers, was the beneficiary of Josh McDaniels turning down that job. So, huh, interesting. 312-981-7200. Our world traveling listener Wally is going to talk to us in just a minute here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Brian Noonan here on 720 WGN. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Bubala. And my little show has a Facebook fan page, The Matt Bubala Show on Facebook. And sometimes in the middle of the night, we're on 2 to 5 a.m. normally on Saturdays, a gentleman named Wally will call in from some far-flung area of the world. Hey, Wally, how are you today?
Hey, Matt, I'm doing well. It's nice to be able to listen to you. I'm actually on my way to the airport now, but I'll stay at home when it's light out.
Yeah.
That's a treat for me.
It's nice to be here when there's people actually on the streets and the sun is in and that fiery orb is in the sky. So
exactly.
I hear you're, so you are on your way to the airport. Where are you heading off to today?
Zurich. Switzerland. Yep.
And so is that a direct flight out of Chicago or do you have to stop somewhere first?
No, it's direct. I'm Swiss.
And so how many hours is that in the air?
About 9.5 going there, and it's a little over 10 coming back.
Oh, man.
Because of the wind. Yeah.
So what kind of amenities do they have for somebody? Are you flying? I know you fly a lot, so I'm assuming you're getting upgrades pretty easily. Are you in the first or business class?
Yeah, on this flight I'm not. But business seats, you know, I mean, the food is a little bit nicer, but you're still on the plane the same amount of time. And the seats are nicer in that they fully recline. I'm in economy tonight, so it's going to be a little bit crowded. But, it's a long flight no matter where you're sitting.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it's got to be nice to be able to stretch out. In economy on a long flight like that, is it still a little bit better than domestic economy? Is there at least a little more room?
A little bit, Matt, but not much. And there's economy plus on United flights, like going to Frankfurt or Munich, something like that. But it's pretty similar to what you'd have on a flight to Cleveland, quite honestly.
Wow. And so you got a 9.5-hour flight ahead of you in economy. And how many people will be next to you? Is it like a 3-3-3 on the big planes, or what's the setup?
Let's see. I think Swiss is a 2-4-2 on this. I think it's a 777 on this one. United's flights up and back to Frankfurt in economy, it's a 333. So it's nice, especially with the flights. I came back on Thursday from Frankfurt, and it was a 333, and there was no one in my pod of three there, so nice. I was able to stretch out a little bit. So that was nice. Not that common.
You know, it's rare to get on a domestic flight and have any empty seats ever anymore because they've reduced flights so much. On the international flights, is that still at least a little more common that you have a little room next to you?
If you're flying on off days, like a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, it's more likely, but it's not even a guarantee on those days. And this one tonight, we'll get in tomorrow morning. We'll land in Zurich a little bit before 11 a.m. They're 7 hours ahead in Zurich, 7 hours ahead of Chicago.
Okay.
So we'll land in the middle of the day and then head to work.
And are you a window person or an aisle person? What do you like, Wally?
That's a great question. I like aisle, quite honestly, because it's easier to get up and up and out.
I imagine on the 9.5-hour flight, you like to get up once in a while and stretch your legs. Do you drink water and make sure you get up every couple hours like they recommend?
I do. Yep. And I also try to just stay standing as long as I can until they close the doors, because they board those flights, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes before the flight time. So.
Yeah.
If you get on right away and you sit down, you're adding to that amount of time that you're just going to be sitting there stationary. Yes.
So, Wally, what do you do for a living? What takes you to Zurich so often, in Paris, and different parts of the world?
Yeah, I do operational consulting, and my client has operations around the world, and so I'm traveling to their locations and their suppliers' locations. So, I'm gonna stretch here right now where I'll be 8 weeks. I'll be home about 8 days.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And is there a Mrs. Wally? And what does she say about
all this? There is. She's wonderful and very understanding.
Yeah.
Very understanding, yes.
Yeah. She must be, or else you're kind of a pain in the butt at home, and it's not that bad to have you on the road. One of the two.
Well, yeah, and actually, I've been traveling pretty much my entire career, and after typically, if I'm home a couple of weeks, sometimes she'll say, "Isn't there somewhere you're supposed to be?" Yes.
Well, now you must build up a magnificent amount of miles, and there must be once a year where Mrs. Wally's like, "Hey, why don't we take a trip? You got all these miles, let's go somewhere." And when she says that, are you like, "Yes, let's go, it'll be fun," or are you like, "Oh my God, please don't make me get on an airplane again?
I just want to be home." But no, it's yes, I'll go wherever she wants, and we've had some great trips. We've been able to use airline miles and hotel nights and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. So that's been nice. That is a little bit of a perk, but like I said, I would give you all the miles and all the hotel nights and all that if you could just give me back the time spent traveling.
Yeah, I imagine. Have you added that up in a year? How many days do you spend actually in that silver tube?
I haven't added that up. I know that when I get to the hotel tomorrow, that'll be my 15th hotel in this 6 week string this year.
Man. Yeah. All right. So, what's the favorite place you go? What's your favorite part of the world? If somebody wants to travel somewhere, what would you say to somebody? Hey, go see this because this is pretty cool.
Switzerland is amazing. I've been in a lot of really neat parts of Germany. Northern Ireland has been great. My wife and I were on a trip to London and to Ireland 2 summers ago, and had a wonderful time. Hmm. There's so many great things, and just getting to know people because. When I'm traveling like this, I'm working with local people a great deal. So it's not, like typical tourist. I mean, you're going to meet some people at the hotel and at the restaurant, but I'm in meetings, 8, 10, 12 hours a day with people from the local area. So I'm getting to know them. And quite honestly, people are really, really nice all over the place.
I heard last weekend, wherever you were, you took in a parade somewhere. What was that?
I was in Schaffhausen, Switzerland, which is about an hour north of Zurich. It's probably the largest town farthest north in Switzerland. and they had their carnival parade last Saturday, and it was a great time, really a lot of fun. Bands, it seems there's people in these bands, Matt, from 8 years old up until they're eight. You know what? I've said from eight, but I got a picture of probably a 1-year-old sitting on a drum in the parade because his father played the drum and his mother played a trombone, and so there was no one to take care of this little guy, and he was dressed up in the same costume as the entire band, and he was sitting on the drum in the parade, and he, cool. he couldn't have been more than a year old, and he had ear like ear muffs,
sure,
on, you know,
protect
the,
his ears,
noise protection, yeah. Yeah, so that was pretty funny. But there's people, you know, in their 80s probably in some of these bands in this parade. So
wow.
Just a fun time.
Yeah. All right. Last question. I know you have to catch a plane. So if somebody's going on a trip across overseas, one of those really long flights we normally don't do, what's your number one piece of advice? Like, do this to make it better.
Dress comfortably.
Yeah.
Dress comfortably, you know, and the thing is, too, just any travel, keep your passport on you all the time. Keep your passport on you, keep cash on you, and dress comfortably for a long trip. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Wally, we're going to check in with you in the overnights sometime soon. Thanks for being
I'll
on with us
call,
in the daytime.
I'll give you a call this Saturday. I'll be in Switzerland, Matt. Thank you.
All right, that'd be perfect. Thanks, Wally. Have a great trip.
Right, bye-bye.
Stay safe. Wally, our world traveler, checks in from all over the world whenever he can. Awesome. 312-981-7200. We're checking in with the Olympics after the 5:30 news. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN, filling in for Brian Noonan until 7 o'clock tonight. Earlier today, we were talking about Jack on This Is Us. Of course, after the Super Bowl last week, they played that episode where we finally found out how it happened, how he died. So we were talking about other moments in movie and TV history that have maybe gotten to you. 773 says, number one death of all time is Mr. Spock in The Wrath of Khan. Number two is Mick in Rocky. Okay, those are pretty big ones. Also says, but the most tragic death in cinematic history would be Hilary Swank in Million Dollar Baby. That was a tough one to take. That was a good movie. That's going back a ways. But you do have to, I was talking about this earlier, A Dog's Purpose. You've got to really be prepared for the emotional waterworks to happen if you're going to watch A Dog's Purpose. That was a tough one to get to. 312-981-7200. If you've got one that really just makes you not watch that movie or TV show again, or you know, just got to you so much at the time, like Jack did. So I'll tell you the story real quick. Kurt Vandraw used to produce Kathy and Judy here for a long time, and I'm still good friends with him, and some of us old producers still text with each other. And he sent us a text of a picture of a card that comes with flowers, and he sent it to his wife. He sent her flowers last week. And it said something like, so sorry for your loss. Just wanted to remind you, though, that Jack is not real. Love your actual husband. He sent her flowers because she was so upset about This Is Us. And I imagine he wasn't the only one that did that. Checking in on the Olympics after the news next, 720 WGN. Jan in Niles, Michigan says, Dances with Wolves when the horse and dogs were killed. Never saw Dances with Wolves. 847 says, my girl, can't watch this movie. Once was enough. That did it. Brian is on 720 WGN. Hey, Brian, what's your movie? What makes you cry? Oop. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, Brian?
Yeah, you are Brian. I am Matt. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. What's the movie that tears you up?
Brian's Song. Brian's I've seen Song. It 100 times. And I tear up every time I see it.
That's the definitive long-term makes men cry movie, isn't it? I mean, our whole lives, yeah. That's been the movie that defines a man crying.
Yes. And it's not because his name was Brian, but I just love that movie.
Yeah.
It's a tearjerker.
Excellent. And, about the Bears. So who can't love that? All right, Brian, thanks so much for checking in. We appreciate it. You have a great weekend, sir. 5:31. Let's get the headlines now. Upstairs, there's Pamela Jones.
Well, thank you, Matt. And, you know, as of now, I'm really experiencing another.
I keep doing that to you.
Oh, my gosh. I think it's so. I'm just excited to, you know, be with you tonight.
Yeah, that's it. I'm so excited. The computer's frying out and things aren't working. While you get it together, I'm going to mention that 847 texted that Colonel Blake from MASH. When Radar announces to everybody that Colonel Blake died, that was a big tearful moment in TV history. I believe also Didn't that happen on Archie? Didn't Edith die on All in the Family? Or is that just how they started out Archie Bunker's place, that Edith had passed away? I imagine that was a moment as well. Now Pam has just left the news station. She's like, you know what, screw it. I'm not even, no, I think she's trying to get things fixed up there. 312-981-7200 is the number. While we get the bugs in the system worked out, we'll talk about other things.
Yeah, let's talk about some other things.
Okay.
That sounds good.
Sure. Yo, yeah, somebody texted earlier what a booski is. So they've got it all wrong. I meant it was talked about earlier. I imagine they're talking about poonchkis, because this week, of course, Tuesday is Fat Tuesday, because Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, on Valentine's Day, no less, is Ash Wednesday. So poonchki day is Tuesday, and you can find in your Jewel and your bakeries all sorts of wonderful poonchkis, not booskis, poonchkis. And if you haven't seen one of these, think of the most awesome, fabulous jelly donut you've ever had in your life. And that's how I would describe a poonchki. Although it isn't necessarily jelly. There's all sorts of fillings, I believe, in different poonchkis. Jess, have you ever had a poonchki?
I have not, but
you've never tried a poonchki?
No, but now that you have talked about it, I want one now. So.
It's like, it's break your diet worthy. If you're on a diet right now to start the new year, you got to take your one day, take your Fat Tuesday, and get at least one poonchki.
Well, you don't got to worry, man. I'm not on a diet.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, good. All right. You're safe then. But for people out there.
And I don't know where the hell.
All right. I'm going to turn that down. As I was about to start cursing up a storm at the computers that aren't working. You wave to me when you want me to pop that back up.
It's banned by the FCC. That's actually a place.
All right. You're back on the air now. I just didn't know where that was going.
Yeah. No, it wasn't going anywhere beyond that. Trust and believe. All right.
How are we looking for those headlines?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, here we go. Right. There's Pamela Jones.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Pamela. See, Brian Noonan was taking the day off. He said, I'm going to sabotage everything, so make sure this, you know, when you're on vacation, you don't want the show to go well in your absence. You don't want to get Wally pepped out of here, so Mr. Noonan must have. Or maybe my bad Kevorka is just rubbed off on you in the daytime hours, Pamela.
You're
going to send
fun.
Me back to overnight.
No, we're having fun. This is a hilarious, hilarious evening on WGN Radio.
That's right. If you don't laugh, you'll cry. So let's just laugh and enjoy life as it comes at us. There's no reason not to. All right. Real quick, before we check in with Andrew Wittenberg, our reporter at the Winter Games, Jim had a comment on poonchki. So he's on the phone real quick. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hello, Matt. I'm going to earn you the respect of all of the Polish people in the Chicago area that listen to WGN.
Okay, do it.
It's not a poonchki. Say the word own, put a P in front of it, and ski on the end. It's ponski.
Ponski.
There you go.
Ponski.
That's plural.
Is it ski? Is it ski, like with an H, or ski?
No, it's C-Z-K-I. Ski.
Ski. Ski.
Ponski.
Ponski.
Ponski, and that's plural.
Ponski. That's plural. What's the singular form?
You got it. You got it. And that's a plural.
Okay.
Ponchek is one.
So ponchek. I'll have one. I will have a ponchek would be one.
That's correct.
But if I want to bring home some poonchki, ponchki.
There you
ponchki.
Go.
Okay.
Ponchki.
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 I'm going to bring home ponchki for everybody.
That's right.
I want savory, please.
If you look at the way the word is spelled, it's P-A-C-Z-K-I.
Mm-hmm.
The A has a little tail hanging on the bottom of it.
Okay.
That A sounds like if you would say the word om.
Okay.
Okay. It's not, you don't pronounce the N as much, but it's ponchki, see?
And the singular again? Ponchki. The singular again, Jim, is?
Ponchek.
Ponchek. And what is your favorite filling in a ponchek, Jim?
I would say rose hip.
Rose hip. So what is that?
It's like it's made out of what's called rose hip. It's kind of a jelly. It's a sweet kind of a. It's hard to explain. It's not strawberry. It's not raspberry. It's they call it rose hip.
So
if you go into a Polish store and you tell them you want rose flavored ponchki, they'll give you the right stuff.
And it's sort of a in between strawberry and raspberry, would you say?
Yeah, yes. It's kind of like it's almost tastes like a berry, but it's not. They call it rose hip.
All right.
You'll see it written on the side, rose hip.
Sounds excellent. I will look for it this week, Jim. Thanks so much for checking in.
Matt, you have a pleasant evening.
All right, sir. You too. I appreciate it so much. Andrew Wittenberg is a reporter for KSL in Salt Lake City, and he is in Pyeongchang, South Korea for the Winter Olympic Games. He's on the phone right now. Hey, Andrew, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Matt? How's it going, bud?
We are good. Have you heard ever of a ponchki in your life?
Never heard of it in my life. In fact, I was just listening before it came on, and I had no idea what you guys were talking about.
So it's a huge deal here in Chicago. Tuesday's Fat Tuesday, and it's a big Polish delicacy. It's kind of like a jelly donut on steroids. And Fat Tuesdays are a big day here in Chicago for ponchki. And so next time you're in Chicago, you've got to get to a Polish deli and ask for a ponchki, okay?
Yeah, it sounds delightful.
It really is good. It really is good, I'll tell you. But you are in South Korea for the Winter Olympics, where it is now, what, going on 9 a.m.? It's about quarter to 9 a.m., is that right?
Yeah, just about coming up on 9 a.m., windy and cold once again. So a little bit of breaking news here for you.
Okay.
The women's giant slalom event was just postponed because of these high winds. I was on with you a couple days ago and talking about the wind and the cold.
Yeah.
They've just postponed Michaela Schifrin's first event here because of the high winds. The men's downhill was postponed yesterday for the same reason. So it looks like the giant slalom for the women also going to have to be moved to later in the week, hopefully when the winds die down.
Yeah, so that's really been an issue because they canceled men's the other night, right?
Yeah, men's downhill was moved to, I believe, Wednesday. And now they're going to have to, we didn't get a new date or anything, but they're going to have to come up with something with the schedule to figure it out and get it in. But yeah, they postponed it today because of the winds.
Well, I guess if winds postponing things is the biggest news that comes out of the games on a negative level, that's still pretty good, right?
Right, yeah. I think all things considered coming into the games, if you said, well, it looks like the wind may be an issue, yeah, I think that's probably pretty good.
Because overall, would you say, Andrew, that the games are off to a great start? I haven't heard, I know there was an earthquake 100 miles away and we've canceled some things because of wind, but overall things are running really smoothly. Is that the headline?
Yeah, I would say so. From my perspective anyway, of course, there's so much swirling around with Mike Pence being here. We talked about that a couple days ago and all the geopolitical stuff. But yeah, overall, everything from our end and our perspective has been that it's moved relatively smoothly, save for the cold weather.
How much are you hearing about that there on the ground, about the geopolitical stuff? Otto Warmbier's father said North Korea isn't truly participating in the games when he was over there. But we just had in our news that somebody wants to nominate the Korean women's hockey team for a Nobel Peace Prize for coming together and playing together in the games. How much talk is there at the Olympics themselves about North and South Korea?
Well, there's definitely a lot of buzz, I think, about the sister that was here for opening ceremonies and getting a lot of attention from the media. It seems like every time that the sister of Kim Jong-un has made an appearance here, it's gotten quite a bit of attention. And I think to some ways, maybe rubbing some Americans the wrong way because, you know, Mike Pence came out and said, well, that doesn't change anything about our relations with North Korea and the sanctions. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely getting a lot of attention, although, I mean, I would say, again, relative on the scale of everything that's going on with the focus being on the games themselves, it hasn't risen to the level of the entire media clamoring to try to do stuff about North Korea. It's still mostly about the games, I would say. And certainly for us, with our perspective in America, we had our first gold with Red Gerard, and that was certainly something that took away from any sort of distraction that may have come up in the first day or so of the games.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about the games in a moment, but Kim Jong-un's sister, has she made herself available to Western media at all for interviews, or does she just make her appearances and then get shuttled away?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. She hasn't done any sort of media availability, which would be, that would certainly rise to the level of doing something outside of the norm. But, yeah, she's kind of only been seen going to and from events, I guess. And so it's been sort of strange in that respect that, you know, it's almost like a novelty, if you will, to be able to see someone from North Korea in such a high power position. I think for Americans, it's sort of just odd more than it is a contentious issue.
Yeah.
So no, she hasn't done like any sort of media or anything, but the intriguing factor is that she's just here and has stayed here for a couple of days.
So you mentioned that the U.S. finally won their first gold medal. We're only a couple days in, but is that a slow start for the U.S. or are great events just not happening yet?
Yeah, and you know, the first event was cross-country skiing, which Americans typically don't do well in. So that was one of the things. Remember 4 years ago in Sochi, everybody just went crazy over Sage Katzenberg in one of the first events, the slope-style snowboarding. Man, sorry, this wind is really howling out here. We're waiting to get on a bus, actually, to go up to one of the venues.
Okay. That's okay.
But 4 years ago, the first really event that was televised was an American gold. And then I think a couple days later, the Americans swept the podium in slope-style skiing. And so there was this big, you know, red, white, and blue surge right off the top. I think you'll see a lot more American medals. We had a silver in luge last night. We had the gold and the slope-style snowboarding. And I think that'll really get everybody going. And, of course, you know, those events that first started, the short track speed skating and the cross-country skiing aren't really specialties for Americans or events that I would say that we are predicted to do incredibly well in. So as it gets going, I think, yeah, it'll build a little bit.
That short track speed skating is so much fun to watch, though, isn't it? You got four guys or six guys or whatever just on this little track. It's like 12 laps, so the first eight, they don't even skate. They just kind of glide around, and then suddenly they kick it in, and it's like watching NASCAR on ice.
It really is, yeah, NASCAR on ice. And then this year they added the new event, the mass start speed skating for the long track, too, which they actually call NASCAR on ice because you have, like, I want to say it's like 25 people on the ice for the long track version. And so, yeah, it's going to be pretty wild to see that for the first time at an Olympics as well. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely cool. A lot of the events that we've been able to – what's a little side note that I'd tell you is the bus system here is pretty wild, and we were talking about that the other day. But they're all, like, charter buses, I believe, that they brought in from Seoul for these games, and they are incredibly ornate.
Really?
There's wild upholstery on all of them, Christmas lights and disco balls. flat screen TVs at the front of every single one of them. And so actually the other night I was coming home and I was watching on a full bus, just packed with a bunch of people. We were watching this short track speed skating on a bus and people were just going wild. So it's a pretty eventful time, even when you're on a bus for 30 or 45 minutes.
It sounds a good time. Now I hear the wind out there as you're waiting for the bus. How bad is the wind chill there right now?
You know, I just heard the weather report right before we came on in Chicago. I'd say not too dissimilar from something down by the lake where you might have a good wind coming in off Lake Michigan. But, okay. Yeah, I would say a solid 10-mile-an-hour to 15-mile-per-hour wind and temperatures right now definitely hovering around the high teens to 20, I would guess.
And
it's so that you have to have gloves and a hat on or you'd be pretty miserable pretty quickly.
And how well attended are these games? I know that, you know, for NBC, it's about the amount of spectators here in the States that make the contract worthwhile. But I know it's also important to the cities that host these games to have people in the stands and spending money locally. When I saw, what did I see the other night? I saw some curling and I've seen some short track and things like that. I feel like I've seen seats available every time I've seen a venue where I've been able to see the seats. How many, you know, is it easy to get tickets if you were in Korea right now?
Yeah, I would say you wouldn't have trouble getting tickets. You might have trouble getting tickets to the high profile events, the figure skating, the USA hockey, men's or women's, things like that, or any sort of the short track speed skating is sort of like a national attraction here in South Korea. So some of that has been attended very well. But that's not too uncommon from what I saw in Rio, where a lot of the smaller events, you know, there's certainly space.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to be able to find the time and the you know, if you're going to just take a trip to South Korea, I think you've probably figured it out by now after coming from the States what you're going to do about tickets.
Yeah.
But I think the latest numbers we heard were something like 70% of tickets for all events were sold.
And is that considered pretty good?
That's higher for the big events, yeah.
And is 70% considered pretty good? Is that a happy number when they're reporting that?
You know, I don't know. There was a lot of speculation, not speculation, but there was a notion that what would